pricing terms, which basically changes their negotiating tactics, not only at the bargaining table for natural gas, but also around other geopolitical interests, vis-a-vis Belarus, vis-a-vis Georgia. So we can think about lots of different things that this begins to impact, because ultimately they don't want to lose market. So that's but one example. You can think about this spilling over into Asia as well, where the oil index paradigm has continued to persist until recently, when you actually see KOGAS actually signing up a long-term contract for a cost plus, a hub plus index for gas out of the Cheniere facility at Sabine Pass. What do you think they're going to do with that contract at every subsequent pricing negotiation they have? They're going to walk in, they're going to put it on the table and say, look, I want a gas index deal because I've got one and I've got a line of suppliers willing to provide it to me. It changes everything. It's about liquidity. And that's something that has been lost in a lot of the comments I've heard today, is there's been no discussion of what liquidity actually means for the way commodities are priced. Gas has been indexed to oil because it has not had liquidity. That's something that's changing in a dramatic way, largely because of what's happened with shale in this country.
And that concludes today's Geostrategic Edition of Earthwatch. We welcome your comments with an email to rknight, that's RKNIGHT at WBAI.org. And for Earthwatch, I'm Robert Knight in New York.
Check this out. This is Chuck, your public enemy number one, the rebel without a pause, bringing the noise and fighting the power right here to the Sights and Sounds. That's right, Sights 99.5 WBAI.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. Once again, and not surprisingly, the religious fundamentalists have got it wrong. They're all over at NOAA cursing it because it doesn't adhere to their notion of whatever that tale is supposed to be telling us. If they knew what was good for them, they'd be picketing Jonathan Glazer's new film, Under the Skin, which has absolutely nothing to say about the Bible, but instead strikes at the very heart of humanity's self-proclaimed status as the center of the universe. I think we know each other here. I think we're all steeped in enough true science fiction, or at least have read enough Tiptree to all know that mainstream portrayals of alien intelligence, all that Star Trek, Star Wars stuff, are BS. If intelligent life exists elsewhere in the universe, and given the odds, I think that's likely, it probably won't be bipedal, it certainly won't be speaking English, it may not even be identical at all on a base biological level. And given that divide, the things that we consider key to the human experience, emotions, art, the entire sensuality of living, may be so far outside a true alien's perception as to be completely indecipherable. Remember the Horda? More like that, although we shouldn't even count on a core maternal instinct to connect on. At one moment late in Under the Skin, Scarlett Johansson, playing a creature whose origins are left somewhat ambiguous but are pretty clearly alien, sits in a diner and is served what must be the most beautiful piece of chocolate cake on Earth. She takes a large forkful of the dessert, slowly raises it, takes a mouthful, savors it, and instantly retches it out. That's Glazer's commentary on all those Starman moments when an alien is supposed to be seduced to the wonders of human existence as if a piece of Dutch apple pie was in itself enough to realign core perceptions and instinct. Perception, specifically an alien's perception, is at the heart of Under the Skin. The title can be taken literally. It addresses a revelation late in the film, but it also serves as a metaphor that works at several levels, addressing the seeming soullessness of Johansson's alien predator, who for the bulk of the film travels through Scotland in a white van, picking up men and luring them into an abandoned house where, for want of a better explanation, they are then slowly digested for purposes obscure. And it refers to her growing and potentially fatal curiosity for what drives her prey, all that reveling in the senses, in sexuality, in emotion. Johansson's alien, and by the way, none of the characters, to the best of my memory, is given a name, but Johansson's alien is the protagonist, and Glazer reflects her experience by filming this story at a cool, deliberate reserve. We're seeing an alien life through an alien's eyes, courtesy of her alien soul. An opening sequence specifically references 2001 A Space Odyssey, and there's a lot of Kubrick's clinical detachment here, particularly in the equal weighting between moments of true incident and the blank spaces in between, where we're being transfixed by some sumptuously photographed bit of scenery or of Johansson's impassive face. But there's also a whiff of Werner Herzog here in his regard for nature as an impassive force, neither sympathetic nor overtly antagonistic to the needs and wants of humanity. In this case, that's an observation that cuts both ways, referring both to the alien's regard of humanity, but also to Earth's response to the alien once she dares to try to go native. It'd be interesting to run Under the Skin in double feature with Aguirre, The Wrath of God, or, more pointedly, Grizzly Man, for which parallels are distinct and intriguing. On its own, though, Under the Skin is rapturous, mesmerizing, incisive science fiction, and a truly unique, what can I say, experience. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are now archiving these reviews over at Cinefantastique Online, so go on over to cfqonline.com and give us a listen.
Thanks, Dan. As a semi-regular listener of Hour of the Wolf, I appreciate your efforts and CFQ as well. Good to have a link. Oh, good morning. I'm Max Schmid. I'm sitting in for Jim Freund on Hour of the Wolf today. And the rest of the show will be jammed wall-to-wall with radio science fiction and dramas. We'll hear a two-part story from Escape, an adaptation of The Earth Abides by George R. Stewart. And we'll wrap the show up with another episode of X-1, another Robert Sheckley story called The Wind is Rising, perhaps inspired by yesterday's midnight snowstorm. All right, let's get underway with part one of Earth Abides, which was originally heard on the CBS anthology series Escape on November 5th, 1950.
You, finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you escape.
Today, Escape brings you one of the most unusual and terrifying stories of recent years. It is a story of such scope that the producers of Escape, in order to dramatize its full impact, will present it in two episodes. So now, with the performance of John Daner as Isherwood Williams, we bring you part one of George Stewart's powerful novel, Earth Abides. If a killing type of virus strain should suddenly arise by mutation, it could, because of the rapid transportation in which we indulge nowadays, be carried to the far corners of the earth and cause the death of millions of people.
If you should awake some morning, tomorrow morning, let's say, if you should wake to a man-dead world, where virtually all of human life had been dissolved from the face of the earth, leaving behind only buildings, bridges, machines, if you should awake to such a world tomorrow morning, what would you do? Where would you go? My name is Isherwood Williams. I was a student of ecology. I was in the Northern California wilderness gathering specimens of rock, plant, and animal life. I was alone, and had been for a month. Climbing up to a sharp ledge one day, I felt a sudden sharp pain in my extended right hand. I withdrew it under reflex and looked up, and there, a foot above my head, I saw him, a rattler, coiled, ready to strike again. Slowly, carefully, I lowered myself. I began to suck the poison from the bite. I wrapped a handkerchief about my wrist, tourniquet style, and headed for my cabin. There, I broke open my snake bite outfit, cut a neat crisscross in my hand at the point of the wound, and applied the rubber suction pump. Then I lay down on my cot. I felt sick. Sick because of the poison. Sick because I was alone. I was weak. In a few moments, deep, warm blackness closed in about me. I don't know how long I was unconscious, but I was awakened by the door.
Harry? Harry, look here. This one's still alive, I think.
Hello. I'm glad you came. I'm sick.
He's still alive, all right. Don't go near him. Come on, let's get out of here.
No, wait. I'm sick. Come back. Why did they leave me when they knew I was sick? What were they afraid of? I tried to stand. My knees were like sponge rubber. But finally, I was able to stumble to my chest of drawers. And then I saw the hammer, my rock hammer, resting on the top of the chest. And it suddenly became the most important thing in the world to me. If I can lift this hammer, I told myself, I will live. I wrapped my fingers about its handle, and I lifted it slowly, then let it down. I breathed a sigh of relief. I would live. In the morning, I felt better. I got up, packed the car, and headed for the nearest town, Hudsonville, about 10 miles to the south. They'd take care of me in Hudsonville.
Consider, if you will, the case of the rats that once inhabited Christmas Island, a small bit of tropical verdure some 200 miles south of Java. In 1903, a new disease sprang up. The rats proved universally susceptible and soon were dying by the thousands. In spite of great numbers, in spite of an abundant supply of food, in spite of a rapid breeding rate, the species is now extinct.
Hudsonville. The familiar houses, stores, taverns, but no one on the streets. A hen scratched quietly in the dust. A lonely dog was howling somewhere. I got out of the car and walked into a little restaurant. The place was empty. Hey. Is anybody here? Hey! Silence. Deathly silence. On the counter, I saw a newspaper. Flipped it open. The headline...
Crisis. Acute.
I read the story, a dispatch from Washington.
The federal government is herewith suspended, as of the emergency. All officers, including those of the armed forces, will put themselves under the orders of any functioning local authority, by order of the acting president.
Front page, column 3.
The West Oakland Hospitalization Center has been abandoned. Its functions, including burials at sea, are now concentrated at the Berkeley Center. Keep tuned to your radio.
The radio. The radio in my car. I turned the dial to the most powerful station in the vicinity. A static. Nothing but static. Desperately, I twisted it from one end of the band to the other, praying for a human voice, a bar of music. Anything. There wasn't a single radio station still in operation. The horn. Someone will hear the horn. Silence and death. I leaned back in the seat, exhausted. I sat that way for minutes before I looked at the paper again. The paper. The last sign of human life left to me. It was dated a week before. And I read it through twice. Whole cities had perished. Medical centers, bodies. Doctors, nurses, burial crews hard at work, and then they too had fallen and died. The United States, the world, the stagnant flesh pool of death. Suddenly, with terror, I thought of home. I started for San Francisco. On the way, I helped myself to a tank full of gas at the station. Oddly enough, the pumps were still working. Electricity still flowed from the river-driven generators, and the lights still blazed. I wondered how I had survived. Perhaps the snake venom had counteracted the virus. Perhaps the clean wilderness, who could save? But somewhere, someone else was alive. The men at the cabin door, there must be others, but where? I passed some cows in a pasture. Smiled to myself at the irony. The world belonged once again to the animals.
Ecological observation. Pedigree means nothing now. The prize, which is life itself, will go to the keenest brain, the staunchest limb, the strongest jaw. The champion boars will die in their well-kept pens, but the shoats will roam wild. In a few generations, their legs will grow slim, their bodies thin, their tusks longer. Man, they need nothing from man.
I passed 4 or 5 cars on the highway, abandoned. But farther along, I spotted another car, and there was a man inside. I stopped and got out. He had fallen over the wheel, and there was a bottle beside him, and the strong smell of cheap liquor. I shook him. Come on, come on. Come on, wake up. Wake up, wake up. Wake up, I said.
Hey,
come on now, come on.
Now, leave me alone. Now, you just leave me alone.
I said, wake up.
Hey.
What's your name? Your name.
Oh, what difference does it make?
Now, come on, come on. Don't go back to sleep. What's your name?
Varla. Barlow's my name. 58 Barlow's in the Seattle telephone directory, and I'm the only one left. Me. the dirtiest skunk of the lot. What am I doing alive? Answer me that.
Go back to sleep, Mr. Barlow.
Wait. Here. It's free. On a house. Everything's on a house now. Have a drink.
No, thanks.
Let me tell you why I'm still alive. Because I'm being punished. I'm not good enough to die.
Oh, goodbye, Mr. Barlow.
Hey, come on back. I'll buy you a drink. It's good. I'll buy you a drink. Look here, I got $500. I took it from a bank yesterday. You want it? Here. $500.
San Francisco, the mute, dead city of San Francisco, a naked forest of concrete with its empty streets, its ghosts of newspapers blowing across alleys. I crossed the Bay Bridge, stretched over the blank water. A single car, coupe, parked in an emergency recess, was its sole possessor now.
The Bay Bridge.
A final monument to the greatness that had been mankind. I drove the familiar route toward home. Turned right at San Lupo Drive, pulled up in front of the house. I walked up the stairs, took out my key, opened the door. Strange odor of must and stale food blew out at me. Mom? Dad? Mom! I fell into a chair and cried.
Observation. The desert and the wilderness began a long time ago. Men came only in the latter centuries. They camped at the springs and wore faint trails through the mesquite bushes. They laid rails, strung wire, paved long, straight roads. After a while, men were gone, leaving their small works behind them. In 1,000 years, at a conservative estimate, man will be a forgotten stone in the jungle.
Where would I go? I had no idea. I only knew I had to keep going. Change of place was my only comfort now, the only way I had of convincing myself that there was still life in the world. The snake bite began to hurt again, but it felt good, some small sign of living flesh. I left San Francisco and started across what had once been the United States, Route 66, through the giant Southwest, the towns, the empty, dead towns, the dust-blown, silent towns passed me by, one after another. Kingman, Flagstaff, Albuquerque, Oklahoma City. Just outside Guthrie, I saw a Negro tending his garden as if nothing had happened. He was afraid. He waved me on with a shotgun. In Tulsa, the sprinklers were still going in the park. I stopped. In Fayetteville, Arkansas, I heard music. Came from a little bar, neon lit, spitting its bright invitation to the empty street. I took my hammer and went inside. The bottles were stacked neatly, bar rag over the rack, and a broken jukebox, blazing in blues and reds, singing its song to the vacant, varnished tables.
Just want to jump up
and
down. Shut
up.
Like a carnival.
Shut up.
It's love.
Shut up.
There's a sparkle.
Shut up.
Me.
Shut up. Shut up. Shut up. Shut up.
But you're soaring to where. Oh, but it's love.
I slept in the best auto courts of the most luxurious hotels. I slept and ate from the leavings of 150 million people. All the wealth of America had been bequeathed to me. All its wealth and its death. 3 days later, I pulled up the Pulaski Skyway, crossed George Washington Bridge, and came to Manhattan. The splendid, slow-decaying corpse of Fifth Avenue, the sable mink in the windows, the silly traffic lights changing color at naked intersections. Manhattan, soulless and dead.
Stretched out between its rivers, the city will remain for a long time. Stone and brick, concrete and asphalt, glass. Time deals gently with them. A window pane loosens, vibrates, breaks in a gusty wind. Lightning strikes, loosens the tiles of a cornice. The shade trees on the avenues die in their shallow pockets. Bats fly from the 59th floor. City dies slowly.
In the afternoon, I saw smoke from a chimney in the Bronx. I drove to the house, a small house, and knocked on the door. I heard footsteps. When the door opened, I saw a little, bald man with a broad smile, holding a handful of playing cards.
Milt Carson, how do you do? Come on in. You're in time for supper.
Well, thanks. I just ate.
This is Mrs. Carson.
How are you?
Won't you sit down?
Thanks.
Where are you from?
California.
I had a relative there.
We're just finishing a hand of gin. Say, look here. Isn't that a beauty?
Oh, the television set? Yes. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's a combination radio, television set, radio player. I'll bet it even does the washing. It took us 2 days to get it up the steps from the radio store.
I always wanted a set like that.
Yes, but there's nothing on the air.
Sir, always wanted a set like that. Jen, there you are.
I owe you $10,000.
Well, give it to me tomorrow. There's a busted window at the Chase National. All the money you want. I carry $50,000 with me all the time just to be on the safe side.
Of course, you can't buy anything with it now, but sure feels nice to carry around.
How about some salami?
No, thanks. I just ate.
Oh, yeah. Say, do you like canasta?
Not much at cards.
Oh, canasta, I can teach you. It's simple, like rummy, but a little different. What I was wondering was, why don't you stay here? It got everything you'd want right here in the Bronx. Need a coat for the lady, break a window at I.J. Fox. You should see some of the diamonds I got Mrs. Carson at Tiffany's yesterday. Beauties. Hey, where are you going?
I've got to get started.
Well, where? There ain't no place to go.
Lots of luck.
Well, thanks, but I wish you could stay with us.
No, thanks. Goodbye. Oh, the scavengers. How long would they last? Through the winter? And it was doubtful. There'd be no central heating. Even breaking furniture in the fireplace wouldn't keep them alive. They were like highly bred spaniels or Pekingese who walked the city's streets at the end of their leashes. They would die with the city a season or two later of pneumonia or accident. The Negro in Oklahoma with his heart to the land, he would survive. Milt Carson and his new wife, they were waiting for death at the card table. Two weeks later, I was in San Francisco again. The streets were just as bare as when I left. The lights were still on, but dimmer now. Water flowed still from the faucets. But San Francisco had a new population, the dogs. They hunted in packs, all breeds bound together in the common search for food. Danes, Dalmatians, Scotties, toys, all of them. The dogs had taken over the city. And I decided to move back into the house because of the familiar things. Late one afternoon, I went out to look around the neighborhood, and I heard the yelping too late. As I looked around me, I saw myself being surrounded by dogs. They were hungry, ravenously hungry, and they started to close in. The car was on the street some 50 feet away, if I could make the car. One dog made a lunge for me. I kicked violently and started to run. They were after me, some of them running at my legs. He reached the car, opened the door, and slammed it. They climbed to the window, baring their fangs, their red tongues, wet with hunger. But I was safe. Then the night. And that night, the lights went out. The lights. The lights. Hey, the lights. What's happened to the lights? I looked out over the city. It was black. Black as death. The age of electricity was over. Finished. And there were candles. Mom kept them for ceremonial occasions in the buffet, and I found myself hoarding matches and flashlights, candles, piling them up in the corners. There was only night and day. Time had lost its meaning. And I had food and clothing. And then I had books to read. The Bible. And I read the Bible.
Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine.
There was a faint but unmistakable light burning that night a mile away on Knob Hill. I got into the car and drove to the light. I parked the car. I reached for my hammer. In the window, a shadow moved. As I approached the door, a flashlight caught me in its glare. I stopped, dead still. I waited for someone to say, "Put your hands up. Who are you?" There was a breath of perfume.
That's a nice car.
I can pick up a better one on any street corner.
Come on in.
Thanks.
How about some coffee?
Sounds good.
How come you didn't find me before this?
Well, I just saw the light tonight. I decided to investigate.
I saw your light lots of times.
Oh?
You live down on San Lupo Drive.
Well, why didn't you come in?
Woman's pride. Man's supposed to come after the woman.
Uh-huh. That was before. There are no rules now.
No, but they're habits. Won't you use black?
Yeah, black's fine.
I don't want you to think you're the first one I've met. There were five or six others. They saw the light and they came in. They had coffee and I sent them on.
What about me?
I don't know you.
Well, I'm clean, well-educated, healthy, young.
Those are the good things.
I dislike turnips, canned beans, stupid people.
What's your name?
You'll laugh.
I would laugh. What's your name?
Isherwood, my mother's maiden name. Everybody calls me Ish.
Well, mine's Emma. Emma and Ish. Nobody's going to write any love songs with that combination.
No. Don't imagine they will.
I like you. Coffee will be ready in a minute.
Emma, will you come and live with me?
I don't know you.
What is there to know? That I like you, and you like me? That we're both alone. Emma?
What?
Emma?
Yes.
Good.
Ceremony. It ought to be some kind of ceremony.
Have you a Bible?
Bible? On the mantle. I've never used it. I just had it. Here?
Give me your hand. Now, we shall be together always. Emma was warm and understanding, a good woman, a healthy woman. Soon there was a baby to be born. I had read some books, but I couldn't read enough. I stood by her during the night and tried to help. When the morning came, we had a son, the first born since the great disaster. Then there was the matter of time.
We won't need to know the exact hour.
No, that's true. The clocks have stopped, but what's the difference? We eat when we're hungry, and when we're tired, we go to bed.
put the months in the years. It's important to know when the year ends.
Oh, that's what I've been doing out on the porch.
What is that thing out there?
Well, it's a transit. See, I set it towards the sun, and when the sun reaches the winter solstice, I know that to be the shortest day of the year. And that will be our new year.
Well, New Year's Day isn't the shortest day of the year.
No, December 21st is. And we'll make that our new year. Man's always been trying to get close to that date for the new year, but calendar makers always went off.
How long will it be?
A few days.
And then it'll be 1950 what?
Oh, no. That was the old calendar. This will be our year one.
The year one. We must call it something. I know. We'll call it the year of the baby.
The new life began around the simple problems of Emma, myself, and the baby. The day came when the sun reversed its path. I took my hammer and a chisel. Emma and I had found a tall, smooth rock in what had once been a small public park. In the rock, I carved the figure one. The new beginning, I said to her. The rebirth of man. In the year two, the rats came. San Francisco was overrun with them. They had broken into most of the grocery stores, torn open the cartons, gorged themselves, and gave birth to more rats. They multiplied by the hundreds and then the thousands. Rats, the carriers of deadly bubonic plague.
Come quick, they're getting in.
Where?
Here. It shoot through the door.
Oh, get me that kitchen chair. Hurry now, hurry.
Here. They're going to the bedroom, toward the baby.
Now hold the chair against the opening. I'll nail it later.
The baby! The baby!
I rushed into the bedroom, taking my hammer with me. There were two of them, tremendous rats. I stationed myself at the crib. One came toward me, unafraid, for the fear of man had been bred out of them. And I flung the hammer at him. Ah! I'd missed. The rat leaped up into the crib. I threw a blanket over him and flung him to death on the floor. Then I picked up the hammer and threw it at the other one. Dead. Dead. But that was just two of them. Outside, I could hear hundreds squealing, their tiny feet scratching at the walls. How long would it be before they destroyed us? Man was gone now. This was the age of the rats.
Escape is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. You have just heard part one of Earth Abides by George Stewart, specially adapted for Escape by David Ellis. John Daner was starred as Ish, with Larry Dobkin as Dr. Stanley, and Peggy Weber as M. Featured in the cast were Michael Ann Barrett, Parley Bear, Ron Brogan, Paul Fries, and Lou Krugman. The special music for Escape was arranged and played by Ivan Dittmars. Next week, Escape will bring you the second half of Earth Abides, truly one of the most gripping and terrifying novels of recent years. This is CBS, where you spend an hour with Frank Sinatra every Sunday afternoon on the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You're listening to Hour of the Wolf. Jim Freund is taking a week off this week. I'm Max Schmid sitting in. Ordinarily, I host a show called The Golden Age of Radio that can be heard here on WBAI New York at 7 o'clock, 7 to 9, Sunday evenings. Don't miss it. We're saluting Mickey Rooney this week, and listening to a mystery serial called I Love a Mystery, Bury Your Dead, Arizona. But now let's get back to Escape for part two of The Earth Abides from November 12th, 1950.
You, finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you Escape.
Today, with the performance of John Daner as Isherwood Williams, Escape brings you one of the most unusual and terrifying stories of recent years. George Stewart's powerful novel, Earth Abides.
If you should awake some morning, tomorrow morning, let's say, if you should awake to a man-dead world where virtually all of human life had been destroyed from the face of the earth, leaving behind only buildings, bridges, machines, if you should awake to such a world tomorrow morning, what would you do? Where would you go? This is the year 3. My name is Isherwood Williams. 3 years since I returned from the lonely mountain country of Northern California to find that mankind had virtually vanished from the earth. Some unknown virus had scourged him from his high place among animals. His great cities were tombs. His entire civilization was crumbling. I toured the emptiness that had once been called America. From the silent towers of Manhattan to the Golden Gate Bridge, I saw in all 10 human beings still alive. In the 4th month after my return to San Francisco, I saw a light on Nob Hill. It was there I found M, who became my wife. Year 1 passed. We call it the year of the baby. Year 2, we call it the year of the rats. Now it was year 3. M, the baby, and I were struggling for existence amid the fast-decaying wealth of San Francisco.
Oh!
All right, now, be careful. Careful, Em.
Isn't it funny? This always makes me feel like I'm doing something wrong.
What?
Now breaking into the biggest food store on Market Street.
It's not wrong, Em. There's no private property anymore. This city, this grocery store, it's all ours now.
But Ish, look. Look at this place.
Yeah, the rats left their mark here, all right. There's the answer to their death. They ate all the food they could get at, and they ate each other.
Oh, Ish, how horrible.
Yeah, it's a familiar pattern, Em. A species grows, dominates the earth for a short time, then dies. Oh, come on. We'll take a look at the bottles and the canned goods.
Ish, look, the labels are gone. They're eaten off.
Yeah, well, we'll just have to try to guess at the contents by the shape of the can.
Well, the bottles are easy. Here, look. Bottles of real lemon juice.
Fine. This should be corned beef.
Look at it all. Tons of it. We could live on just this forever.
No, no, Em. We can't be scavengers forever. That's why the rats died. Em, we've got to grow things. We've got to bring something new into the world. Well, come on. Let's get some of this stuff home. During that year, Em and I found whatever we needed for ourselves and the baby in the empty, silent stores of San Francisco. We lived on the spoiling supplies of a million people. One evening, just after dusk, I suddenly noticed a strange, wavering glow in the sky over the downtown area of the city. I called Em to the window. There was a smell of smoke in the air. Fire, Em!
Ish!
San Francisco is on fire!
Ish! Isn't there something we can do?
No. There were. Must be 3 square miles of flame.
What started it, do you suppose?
We'll never know. Oily rags in the basement, some gasoline explosion. Could be any one of 1,000 causes.
Will it reach the house?
No, I don't think so. Wind's blowing it away from us. It'll burn itself out in a day or two.
Well, come away from the window.
Em. Em, do you smell gas?
I don't know.
It smells like it to me.
Open the door to the hall.
Yeah.
Hey, the hall is filled with it. Hey, we've got to get out of here. Gas line must have burst. One spark in this place will blow up like a bomb.
Baby, I'll get the baby.
All right. We'll be safe from the fire escape. Hurry, Em. Here, I'll take the baby.
Be careful.
And just hang on to the rail. Now walk slowly. Come on. We started down the fire escape. In the distance, the flames were gutting the heart of the city. Parts of Chinatown were already gone. Kept going down to street level, and then we started running. Any second, a spark could blow the building to dust, and we ran, our breath tearing in our throats. Back against the wall, Em. The shockwave. Em, are you all right?
Hold me close.
It's all over, Em. We're going to be all right. We moved to another section of town that had been spared by the fire. The days passed, the days and the weeks. Em and I were growing tired of the canned foods and wanted some fresh vegetables and fruit. But we needed a car. One day, Em and I found a Jeep in a garage. In the storeroom, I found new tires to replace the rotted ones the Jeep had been standing on.
Will it work?
Well, after 2 years, hard to say. I'm no mechanic.
All the cars to choose from, and we pick something like this. I always wanted a convertible. Maybe a Cadillac or a Packard.
It's more useful, Em. More durable. Besides, it's all we need. All right, Em. Let's try it. Step on the starter. Mm-hmm. No. All right, now try it. Oh, come on. Come on, start. Oh. Good, come on. Good, come on.
She did it.
One night, several months later, Em shook me awake.
Ish?
Huh?
Ish, wake up.
Hmm?
There's something outside moving around.
What?
Right by the window.
Give me the hammer.
Be careful, Ish.
I'll be all right.
I'll come with you.
No, stay here. I'll be right back. Who's there? Girl. Come here. I won't hurt you. Come here. What are you doing?
Eileen. My name is Eileen.
Where are you from?
Eileen. Hungry.
Well, come on inside.
Eileen. Oh, I've been looking all over for you. Eileen, where have you been? Okay, mister. You can put that hammer down. I ain't gonna hurt you.
Oh, sure. Sure, well, come on inside. Em! Em, somebody's here!
Just Eileen and me. She's my adopted daughter. About a year ago, I found her on Main Street in Los Angeles. She was starving. Can't forage for herself, Eileen can't, so I gotta take care of her. She can't think so good.
Well, how long you been here?
About 2 days, wandering around the city. Nice city, this San Francisco. Wished I'd have visited here when it had people. Reckon I really could have had myself a time.
I'll get you two something to eat.
Well, that's mighty nice. By the way, I sure am an impolite cuss. If my name's Ezra, I don't believe I caught yours.
Isherwood. This is M.
Well, hello. I'm happy to know you. Eileen, looks like we've met up with some real nice people.
Ezra and his new daughter, Eileen, stayed with us, made their home in the house next door. Now the year three has passed. We called it the year of Ezra. November, the year four. A woman came a week ago. She had dark hair, dark eyes. She was alone. Ezra has taken her for his wife. June 9th, the year five. Our second son was born this day. We named him Joey. April, the year six. Two men and a woman have come. George says he's a carpenter. Harry worked in the bank. Well, he'll have to learn a trade. The woman is called Mabel.
Ish. Ish, you better come with me.
Well, what's the matter?
The water. It stopped running in the faucets.
Well, maybe it's just a broken pipe in your place.
No, I checked, and it ain't just my place. I've checked all the houses around, and there ain't any water running in any of them.
Maybe it's a water main under the street.
I don't think so. You know what I think?
What?
I think the water stopped way up in the mountains someplace. Ish, San Francisco's going dry.
Two weeks, not a drop of rain. Ezra, we can't go on boiling the water forever. If we're going to live, we've got to get out of here.
Yeah, but there's still all them canned goods.
That's what's wrong, Ezra. We've been living off the old instead of building something new. Look, we've got to forget that water ran out of faucets and vegetables come in cans. We've got to start growing things ourselves.
We will when the time comes, yes. I reckon.
You better come quick.
What is it, Em?
Eileen.
What's the matter with her?
She must have been drinking polluted water.
Typhoid.
Book say, Ish? What are we going to do?
Isolate the others. Mabel can nurse Eileen.
What do we do for her? What's the treatment?
You can't shorten the disease, it says. All you can do is help make it less severe. Now, don't worry, Ezra. We'll do our best.
Eileen, she's so helpless. She don't understand.
Yeah, but you move in with us. If this thing spreads, it can wipe out all of us.
Another case.
Who is it?
George.
Move him in with Eileen. Get another bed in there.
You won't have to.
What do you mean?
Eileen's dead.
This is the year six, a year of disease and death. I went to the drugstores, walking the misty, dark streets of the city, armed with my medical text, my hammer. I raided the dusty shelves and the long, warm refrigerators of the pharmaceutical departments. The wonder drugs had long since rotted in their vials. Some sulfur was still potent, and I used it liberally. Yet case after case of typhoid broke out. Some lived, most died, including our firstborn. Our little community, upon which I had pinned the hopes of a new birth of mankind, had dwindled from 12 persons to 7. 5 adults, only 2 children.
You've got to get some sleep, Ish.
How many of us are left, Em? Count them for me.
Ezra, George, Mabel, my second son, Joey, and Ezra's boy. You and I.
Oh, Em. Em, what's the good of starting again? We're being exterminated from the earth, every small being of us, so things can become green again.
There are 7 of us, Ish. Once there was only me, and once there was only you. Alone and separated. There are still 7.
Oh, Em. Em, what would I do without you?
Go to sleep.
Well, you won't make the mistake a second time. Won't be any looking back. We'll forget the trains that used to run. And the tall buildings. And the soft food. We'll go back to the earth. Back to the earth, Em.
back to the earth.
We left San Francisco, we few survivors. We packed only the essentials, the machines, the conveniences. We left to the sun and the wind. From this time on, we'd work in the soil. The decay of the old times was behind us now. We went south and east until we came to a watered land, green with growing things. This would be our Eden. Here, without the memories of a dead people about us, we would begin mankind again. Come here, Joey.
Yes, Daddy.
Joey, here. Sit down here next to me. I want to ask you some questions.
Sure.
Now, first of all, what year is this?
Oh, that's an easy question. The year 15.
Joey, did you do your reading today?
Sure.
You like to read.
Yeah.
Joey, there's something I want to tell you. You know, there were once a lot of people like us on Earth. Millions. You know that, don't you?
Yeah. I read about them. They could fly.
That's right. Well, someday there'll be millions of people again. And they'll fly again. Years from now. But after I'm gone, there won't be anybody to show them the way. That's why I'm depending on you.
What am I supposed to do?
Learn, read, study. You're going to lead them someday, Joey, after I'm gone. Don't let them go back. You don't understand.
I think I do.
Oh, well, you will. Oh, look. I want to show you what I made this morning.
What is it?
It's called a bow. The guns won't be good much longer. The powder will get rotten. Guns will get rusty. You can hunt with this, kill animals for food. Yeah, look here, see? I carved it out of willow. Then I strung strips of calf hide from one end of the bow to the other. And now watch this. See here, this is the arrow.
That's fun. Let me try.
All right, here.
Like this?
That's right. Now pull back. Hard. No. Hard. There. Now, let go.
Boy, that's swell. Can I take it outside and play with it?
Sure, but be careful with it.
Hey, Billy, look what I got. Hey, Billy!
It took thousands of years for man to pass from the spear to the bow and arrow. I've just done it in 5 minutes. This is the year 19. I have gray hair. It's odd to think of myself as an old man. Well, I'm not really 51. There are 19 numbers in a smooth piece of rock in the meadow that I chipped in with my hammer and chisel. My hammer. What would I do without my hammer? Everything is going along well. Quite a farmer now. Community is growing. There are 45 of us. Strangers that drifted in. Babies born. Maybe man is something you can't quite kill off. A stranger named Charlie came in today. I don't like him. He's gruff and hard. And his eyes... I don't like his eyes.
Sure, 3 men at a time.
Gee, Charlie, how'd you do it?
With my bare hands. Came at me all at once. I grabbed two of them and banged their heads together. They cracked like coconuts. Then the other one I knocked down and stepped on his face. Wasn't much left of him after I got through.
Gee.
It's time for bed, Joey.
Oh, can't he tell one more, Dad?
Maybe some other night.
Okay. Good night, Dad. Good night, Charlie.
Good night, Joey.
Will you come tomorrow night?
Maybe. Great kid you got there.
What did you do in the old times, Charlie?
Oh, a lot of things. For a while, I was a stickman in Las Vegas. Used to be a fighter, too. A lot of things. You name it.
You intend to stay?
Sure I intend to stay. Why not? No other place to go. This is the only good-sized group of human beings I've seen. And believe me, I've been around. Sure, I'll stay.
Everybody works. It's the only way we can live.
Listen, you. If I want to stay, I'll stay, and I'll stay on my own terms. I don't ask anything from anybody. I live my own way. You better understand that right now.
And you better understand something before we go any further, Charlie. I've been elected to leadership in this town, and we aren't a bunch of independent individuals doing what we please. We're a community, working together. Either you accept that, or get out.
We ain't gonna get along, Mr. Isherwood Williams. And I'm staying. Good night.
What is it?
I don't know.
Don't go out there, Ish.
Ish. Ish, he's roaring drunk.
Where is he?
Right outside.
Yeah. What's the matter? Are you afraid? Come on out.
Ish. Ish, don't go.
Well, well, well. The great Isherwood. Howdy, Isherwood.
Put down that gun, you crazy fool.
Let go.
Put down.
Let go of me.
Ish, are you all right?
Never mind me. Get that gun away from him. Get George.
Yeah. Where's George? Bring George. Let's see George take this gun away from me. Hey, George, come on and try to take this thing away from me.
Hey, what's going on here? Charlie. Give me that gun.
Nobody's taking my gun away. It's mine.
Charlie.
What's mine is mine. Stay away.
Give me that gun.
Stay away, George. Stay away. I told him to stay away. George. George!
He's dead. All right, you. You've done enough damage with that thing. Hand it over.
There's only one answer. Death.
Death. You mean kill him? Murder him?
No, it's not murder, Em. You, Mabel, Nezra, and I, we're the government now. We've been elected, Council of Four. There isn't any government but us. It's not a matter of punishment. It's protecting the community from a menace, and that's what Charlie is.
But he was drunk.
All the more reason he might do it again.
Afraid so, Em. We can't take the chance.
We're like a jury.
Let's vote. We've got all the facts.
A vote's been called. Any questions?
Ish. Is it right? Is it right to take a human life?
To save many lives, yes. Em, it's got to be right. We'll take a voice vote. You first, Mabel. What do you say?
Death.
Ezra?
Death.
Em? Well, how do you vote, Em?
Death.
It's unanimous. We'll carry out the sentence tomorrow morning. The Council of Four had made its decision. This was not killing in passion or rage or hatred. This was the deliberate and sane elimination of an enemy. Early in the morning, we tied Charlie to an oak tree. Ezra took Charlie's revolver. Charlie stared at him with childish disbelief. He gasped, slumped into his ropes, his mouth red with blood, his eyes swollen in death. The power of the new state was born.
Is it the new year now?
Yes, Carl. New year. Here, carry my hammer for me.
No.
It won't hurt you. My hammer, here.
No, I don't want to.
Why not?
It's magic.
Magic? My hammer?
Aunt Phyllis says your hammer's magic. She says you're magic.
Carl, it's just a plain, ordinary hammer. No, no. Carl, don't be afraid.
No, it's magic. You're magic.
Dad.
Hello, Joey.
Carl, go and play.
Sure, Dad. Goodbye, Grandfather.
Joey, what's the matter with them? They say I'm magic. My hammer is magic.
You're a legend, Dad. You're the only one left out of them all. Ezra, George, Mabel, Mother M, all gone now. Only you. The hammer's a symbol. Symbol of leadership.
Yes. Yes, that's the way things happen.
You're the only one that's lived through from the old times.
The only one. The only one. Joey.
Yes, Dad?
I'm old. Very old. And I can't see very well. Did I make the numbers clearly?
Yes, Dad. 48. The year 48.
It's all begun again. Life. Generations and generations. O.M. If you could have lived to see your faith come true. And once there were only the two of us, alone and separated. I want to see the old once more before I die. Just once more. The bridge. The Golden Gate Bridge.
We're here, Dad.
How does it look, Joey? Tell me. How does the Golden Gate Bridge look?
It's old and rusty. But it's wonderful. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Is there a car? Small car on the bridge?
Yes, Dad. It's still there.
Can you still see buildings across the water?
Only a few, Dad. It's mostly overgrown. But the hills behind the city are beautiful today.
Good. Joey. Here. Here's the hammer.
Yes, Dad.
You're the new leader now. And the hammer has always been the symbol. Pass it on to the best of them. And, Joey, don't let them make a god of you. Let knowledge be the watchword. Oh, will you understand, Joey?
I understand, Dad.
Know the earth, Joey. Know the earth.
Dad. Men go and come. But the earth abides.
Escape is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. You have just heard Earth Abides by George Stewart, especially adapted for Escape by David Ellis. John Daner was starred as Ish with Peggy Weber as M. Featured in the cast were Michael Ann Barrett, Parley Bear, Jeffrey Silver, Paul Fries, Lou Krugman, and Larry Dobkin. The special music for Escape was arranged and conducted by Ivan Dittmars. Stay tuned now for Make Believe Town, which follows immediately on most of these same CBS stations. Roy Rowan speaking for CBS, where you spend an hour with Frank Sinatra every Sunday afternoon on the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Earth Abides, heard in November on CBS. on the series Escape, and we have just enough time now to squeeze in an episode of X-1 called A Wind Is Rising. Our author, of course, Robert Sheckley. Or is it? He's billed here as Finn O'Donovan, but we know better, don't we? It's from October 3rd, 1957, the 109th episode of X-1. In the cast, you'll hear from Les Damon and William Griffiths and Mickey Rooney as Smanek. A Wind Is Rising to wrap up tonight's Hour of the Wolf here on WBAI New York.
This is Nightline, your open door to people and places, and this is Walter O'Keefe. Nightline invites you to listen in on NBC's award-winning science fiction series, X-1. Now escape to a world of the future.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, A Wind Is Rising by Finn O'Donovan. But first, hear this. Now, X-1. And tonight's story, A Wind Is Rising.
I'd only been on Corella for 8 months. Not long for a seasoned advanced exploration man like myself, but long enough to know one thing. Before long, I was going to kill me, a native Corellan. Maybe I was a little edgy. When you have to live inside a steel and concrete capsule just listening to that fantastic wind howl 24 hours a day, it begins to get you. Anyway, it started when Smanek, he was our Corellan radio man, came up to my quarters to get me. Corellans are a dirty brown and look something like big spiders with five hairy tentacles. Yeah?
Smanek, Earthman.
Well?
Other Earthman, tell Smanek, tell this Earthman, come pretty quick.
Okay.
You got lump sugar.
What for?
Smanek, do something favor, get lump sugar.
No, I don't have sugar, now beat it.
Maybe you got dead meat? Smanek like dead meat.
No meat. Now get your slimy shape out of
Clayton.
Here. Yeah, what's wrong?
Come on down with me. Clayton, I don't think it's good to insult these Corellans.
They have no feelings, you know that. They have no emotional nervous setup.
Just the same, I don't think it's good.
For who?
For you. When you insult somebody by your own standards, you hurt yourself. Even if the object of your insult is a dead thing.
Now look, Nereshev, I'm an advanced exploration expert. You're an anthropologist. You stick to your stuff, and I'll stick to mine.
Sorry.
Now, what's the fuss about?
The water faucet.
What about it?
It isn't running.
What?
I pounded it and put a probe in. It must be blocked out at the storage tank.
How could it be blocked out there?
I don't know. Maybe the wind rolled a boulder at it.
Yeah. More likely one of those spiders like Smanek was fiddling with it.
The natives have been told not to tamper with the water line.
They don't like us. They might...
I thought you said they were incapable of feeling like or dislike or any emotion.
I did. I know they can't feel, but... still, somehow, I get the sensation that they resent us. I'm glad we've only got one of them inside the station.
Regardless of that, we can't live with our water supply cut off.
Oh, listen to that wind. It'll be murder out there.
I'll go. It's my turn.
You wouldn't know what to do if you got there.
It seems quite simple.
You know, come to think of it, it could be a two-man job if there's a boulder.
The wind gauge reads 82 miles an hour.
Just a light breeze on Corella.
Maybe we ought to wait till it drops a little.
Let's ask the gink.
Why do we take him along?
The gink?
He knows the terrain, and like all his kind, he's a fantastic sailor. But they take those woven land boats out in 100-mile winds with no qualms at all.
The brute 14 tons, and it has a diesel engine. We don't need any sailors. If we have to use a steadying sail, I can handle it as well as any Spider-Man.
Just a suggestion.
You stick to anthropology. Open the locks, and we'll get the brute out.
I'll need Smonik to close the locks after us. Smonik!
Eggman call.
Clayton and I are going out in a heavy land car. What's the weather going to be like?
Wind come up along little more. Not anything to be afraid. You got sugar?
No. Here you are, Smonik.
Very good sailing today. You got sail on truck?
We have a steadying sail, made of steel.
Woven reeds, more better. A more easy time.
We know all about that. Open the lock, Nereshev. The brute, as we called it, was armored like a tank and streamlined. It had vision slits of shatterproof glass, and most of its 14 tons were centered near the ground. It was sealed from dust and had six giant tires made of woven steel mesh. It was built to take the rocky terrain of the planet Corella and to navigate in the gale force winds that battered the planet. I strapped myself into the cockpit and we were ready. The wind indicator told me that the winds had risen to 94 miles an hour and rising.
You're listening to A Wind is Rising, tonight's attraction on X-1.
Time, nighttime. The lights dim down for the curtain in theaters on Broadway. A Hollywood star greets the first guests at her party in Beverly Hills. In Chicago, the police plan to close the ring on a band of desperate criminals. At a world-famous circus in Paris, France, the star trapeze artist climbs to a precarious perch high over the center ring. In a Las Vegas nightclub, a hush falls over the tables as one of the great singing stars of our time steps out onto the stage. And in New York's Radio City, the studio warning light flashes, "Stand by. Nightline is about to go on the air, taking you to wherever in the country, wherever in the world, exciting things are happening at night. To make you more than a spectator, to make you a participant in these events, this is Walter O'Keefe inviting you to join us on Nightline, your line to exciting entertainment at night every Monday through Thursday night over most of these NBC stations."
Now back to X-1 and A Wind is Rising.
I looked out over the instrument panel. The Corella station had been set down like an overturned bowl on a rocky plain. In order to get to the water storage tank, we had to travel 6 miles. Immediately around the station were our boulder baffles, huge spikes of concrete designed to stop the boulders that the wind rolled off the mountains. I shoved the brute into gear, and we were on our way. Hang on, Nereshev. Here we go.
The wind is up to 97. Do you suppose we're in for a storm?
The gink said it was fine sailing weather.
For a Corellan, maybe.
Well, this baby can take it. You see the pipeline yet?
The sand is pretty thick in the vision glass. There it is. About 2 points on the starboard bow.
I see it now. What's our speed?
3 miles an hour.
Give us a little more oxygen in here.
What?
Hey, there's something coming toward us.
Looks like a boulder. Hard right.
That was no boulder. That was one of those ginks out for a sail in his land ship.
Playful, aren't they?
Next one scares us like that, I'll shoot him, so help me.
I don't understand how they can sail those flimsy ships on those wooden rollers.
What's our wind speed now?
102 miles an hour. I think it's going to be a storm, Clay.
There's no point in turning back now. We can't live without water.
I'm game if you are.
What's the strongest storm we've ever recorded?
Well, let's see. In the 8 months we've been here, about 168 miles an hour.
Well, this baby was built to navigate up to 200. We'll be all right. We had had two storms on Corella since Earthmen had been there. The first one had almost wiped out the station. That's why the boulder traps were built. The second one had leveled an entire mountain range on the other end of the plain. By the time we reached the water storage tanks, the wind was up to 113 miles an hour. Well, this is it. One of us has got to put on an air suit and repair the damage. Means blowing out the line.
It's my turn.
What do you know about mechanical things? I'll go out. Fasten that nylon rope to me and winch it as I go along. I'll anchor the brute in the lee of the concrete breaker.
Maybe you ought to wait till the wind dies down.
It isn't dying down, it's rising.
We can radio Smanek at the station and get a report.
You think he'll give us a straight answer?
I trust him. Hello, Smanek. This is Nereshev calling Smanek.
This Smanek, Earthman.
How long is this wind going to keep up?
Long time. Maybe even longer.
More than 2 hours?
Yes.
Okay. Clayton is going out to fix the pipe. We'll be back in an hour if everything holds.
Okay.
Well, I'm ready. Lock my helmet.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Open the chamber. Here I go.
Outside, the wind thundered and roared like breaking surf. Once I was almost blown free, but the line held. By the time I crawled back into the ship, I'd cleared the water lines, but my suit was shredded and my air extractor was clogged with dust. The wind was up to 145 miles an hour and still rising.
You all right?
Yeah. All right, let's get this thing going. It's starting to shiver in the wind.
Right.
What's wrong?
I can't start the engine.
Here, let me try. Sand. Sand in the bearings, in the injectors, every place. She'll never start.
Good grief.
Well, we'll have to sail her back.
What?
I said we'll have to sail her back.
At wind speeds like this? It'll be like sailing a little dinghy across the Atlantic in a gale.
Well, what else can we do?
We'll put out the auxiliary anchor and ride it out.
No, no, no. One good boulder and we'd be goners. Come on, raise the sail.
Okay.
Release anchors. Hang on. Here we go. We raised the steel sail and tacked into the wind. Shoved by a wind that had now reached 175 miles an hour, the 14-ton brute soon picked up to a speed of 40 miles an hour. Even reefed down and heeled over, I couldn't hold her. And I had to winch out the steel main sheet to straighten her up. Then it began to happen. The thing we feared the most. What's that?
The wind is tossing rocks at us.
Oh. Well, as long as we're not capsized, we'll be okay.
She's heeling at 45 now.
It's no problem. So, rock, smash the visor. Put on your oxygen mask.
Wait.
entire ship sailing toward the station like it was a fine afternoon.
They usually keep away from the station.
There's no time to worry now. Put you in the sheet. I'm going to head up higher. What was that?
Boulder, snap the mast off.
Holy mother.
We're being blown toward the cliffs.
Is that land anchor out?
Yes.
Oh, pray it'll foul and hold us. Pray.
Our father who art... We're fouled.
Yeah, and it's holding. Now if it'll just bite in.
I think we're anchored. But listen to those boulders. We won't last 10 minutes anchored here.
Move over.
Why?
I'm going to try the diesel again. I don't know, maybe. It's a long shot, but maybe. It's caught. It's caught. Come on, baby. Start. Start! That's it. She's running. She's running. All right, let go of that anchor. Warm up that coffee, Smanek. We're coming in.
Somehow the engine coughed and spit us back to the station. The boulder defense was completely flattened, and one side of the capsule was dented by a huge rock. But otherwise, it was still holding. The winds were up to 212 miles an hour at the time. A dozen Corellan landships were moored by their long vines on the lee side of the station, and more ships were coming in every minute. We slid into the tube and entered the capsule.
Welcome, Earthmen. You have nice sail.
Shut up, you crummy gink.
Earthmen not pleased.
You told us the weather would hold.
Old Corellan saying, one can predict weather, but not do something about it. Very true.
Yeah. We almost died out there. You wouldn't have been planning anything like that, would you?
Smanek no understand.
No? Well, do you understand this? Now get out of here. Get out before I blow your ugly head off with this gun.
Very difficult for Smanek to be without head. Impossible to eat sugar or dead meat for almost 3 weeks before new head grow. Smanek join his people now for summer festival.
Now you do that. Pronto.
Wait a minute, Smanek. Did you say summer festival?
Oh, yes. Ancient Karelian festival. When summer ends, we go sail away to caverns in far west.
Caverns?
Yes. We live in caverns for 3 months. In that way, we have safety.
Safety? From what?
From winds. After summer is over, come winter storms. First storm of year about to start any moment now.
About to start? What do you call what we've been having? The wind is 238 miles an hour right now. The brute's ruined, the boulder defense is leveled, the foundations are cracked.
Very regrettable. Perhaps you like to come stay with us in caverns. Bring sugar.
Impossible. We need oxygen, food, our own water.
Very regrettable indeed. Well, maybe you don't stay and colonize our planet after all. Yes. Really big wind starting to rise now. Smanek go.
Goodbye, Smanek. Thanks for your help.
Smanek do favor. Glad to help. You got sugar?
Fred Collins again, and I'll have another word for you about X-1 in a moment. If that's the game you're missing because of a mean cold, here's something you should know.
Every second someone takes it for the miseries of a cold.
Millions more take bromoquinine.
Every second someone takes it for the miseries of a cold.
Bromoquinine.
More people have taken more bromoquinine cold tablets for more complete relief than any other cold tablet ever sold. You could take aspirin or other single-action cold remedies all day and not get bromoquinine's more complete relief, even for virus colds.
Bromoquinine works to relieve stuffy nose, body aches, fever, irregularity, the blues, and headache. More complete relief, because bromoquinine is the only cold tablet sold with wonder-working quinine and five other medicines, health-fortified with vitamin C. Remember,
every second someone takes it for the miseries of a cold.
Millions more take bromoquinine.
Get bromoquinine brand cold tablets.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Finn O'Donovan's story, Gray Flannel Armor, which makes you wonder if knights would have been still more bold in days of old if they'd had transistor amulets. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. X-1 has brought you A Wind is Rising, a story from the pages of Galaxy, written by Finn O'Donovan and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in our cast were Les Damon as Clayton, Bert Cowlin as Nereshev, and William Griffiths as Smanik. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by George Voutsas and is an NBC Radio Network production.
From October 3rd, 1957, X-1, a Robert Sheckley story, A Wind is Rising. Jim Freund will return for Hour of the Wolf next week, as will Dan Parsons with another movie review. In the meantime, if you enjoyed this type of radio listening, join me Sunday nights every week, 7 to 9, here on WBAI for the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Max Schmid, sitting in for Jim Freund. Thanks for listening. Oh, by the way, if you liked old-time radio, at 5 a.m. this very morning, 2 hours from now, two episodes of The Fat Man by Dashiell Hammett. That follows a Lister, Burn, Baby, Burn. Lister, if you're here, take it away. If you're not, you won't know what to do.
My name is Dan Ingram, and I'm a WBAI fan. They've always been, you know, the station that kicked butt and the station that said what you're not supposed to say because the people in power don't want to hear it, and I love that.
I have to celebrate you, baby.
It's coming. Thrills like you've never seen before. Romance that will shock you. Exotic locations, a cast of thousands, and the adventure of a lifetime.
Sometimes I feel as if I was sparkling all over. And I want to go out and do something absolutely crazy and marvelous.
Just keep in mind that I and the boys is candidates for hanging. And the first time any one of you makes a wrong move, I'm going to kill a whole lot of you.
And to bring new vitality to every explosive chapter, to capture for you the stark realism of people who love so deeply, hate so fiercely, live so recklessly.
All mixed up with Peter Beauchamp.
It's horrid. It's unnatural. It's incestuous. Albanian.
Dei laço no espaço pra pegar pedaço do universo que podemos ver. Com nossos olhos nus, nossas lentes de azuis, nossos computadores luz. Esse laço era verso, mas foi tudo perverso, você não se deixou ficar. No meu emaranhado foi parar do outro lado de lá. Ei, hoje eu mando abraçar. Hoje eu mando abraçaço. Ei, hoje eu mando abraçaço. Ei, hoje eu mando abraçaço. Um amasso, um beijaço, meu olhar de palhaço, seu orgulho tão sério. Um grande estardalhaço pro meu velho cansaço do eterno mistério. Meu destino não traço, não desenho, desfaço. O acaso é o grão, senhor. Tudo que não deu certo, sei que não tem conserto. Meu silêncio chorou, chorou. Ei, hoje eu mando abraçaço. Ei, hoje eu mando abraçaço. Ei, hoje eu mando abraçaço. Hoje eu mando abraço.
rádio station WBAI.
Hey, hoje eu mando abraço.
99.5 FM New York.
Amassa um beijaço, meu olhar de palhaço, seu orgulho tão sério.
4 minutes after 3 o'clock.
Um grande estardalhaço pro meu velho cansaço do eterno mistério. Meu destino não traço, não desenho ou desfaço. O acaso é o grão, senhor. Tudo que não deu certo e sei que não tem conserto. Meu silêncio chorou, chorou. Ei, hoje eu mando um abraço. Ei.
When I leave you, remember I said, with the last words on my lips, I am forever missionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am a
missionary.
Trying to reach my freedom of speech and expressing myself, torturing the symbol of oppression. Let that be a lesson to those that want suppression of the truth. Put on hold, the bold lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth? That's off the way I see it. Well, I'm going off berserk, cause the system work to jerk. My people, the people, all around the pigs work. Tell me I'm wrong, though that's my right in this writing. The Constitution, yo, that's an illusion. Huh, suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm glowing the cover, the red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm the lover of this flag, like many others take the same turn. Like me, they yearn for the flag too. Cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy. So just hand me a flag from the fastest and watch me burn that piece up to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the masses must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn.
Thank you.
Joey to jail, and now they got him in court because he burned the flag. That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle, the star spangle. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn what Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America, home of the brave, land of the free. Boom! This is the home of the slave. Now hold on, just a mother. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why wanna scold me when I taught you the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so what? I'm not scared of you. Your flag, America too. See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn.
Single list alive right here at WBAI. Listener sponsored, non-commercial, community radio right here at its very best. 10 minutes after 3 o'clock, we're gonna do this until the imperialist red, white, and blue turn ashes or melt in acid, whichever comes first, y'all. Listen. Yeah. 99 Sinker Burn Baby Burn on a Thursday, 35 degrees on the streets of New York City. Dedicating the show to Claudia Cottley.